Good morning. It's my privilege to introduce the 2008 Excellence in Scholarship Award winner, Dr. Don Opitz, as our speaker this morning. Dr. Opitz began teaching part-time at Geneva in 1998 and then started full-time in 1999. He has an undergraduate degree from Westminster, a master's degree from Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary, and a PhD from Boston University. His doctoral dissertation has this catchy title, The Social Vision of Johann Eberlin von Günzburg, From Utopian Humanist to Evangelical Reformer. The library has a long waiting list for that one. Dr. Opitz has an active mind and is intensely interested in engaging students, both undergrads and grads, with the life of that mind. His interest in this is so strong that in 2007 he co-authored the book The Outrageous Idea of Academic Faithfulness. Some freshmen may recognize that title since it is currently being used in Learning and Transition, at least portions of it. In this text, Christian students are challenged to deeply engage the world of ideas from the standpoint of a robust Christian worldview. Dr. Opitz is so interested in the discussion of ideas that just last semester he organized the Geneva Literary Society, a group that gathers together out of a common interest in reading good literature and thoughtful conversation. Currently, Dr. Opitz is an associate professor of sociology and higher education and is also the director of the Geneva Master of Arts in Higher Education. Please join me in welcoming the 2008 winner of the Excellence in Scholarship Award, Dr. Don Opitz.
Wow, what a pleasure to be here. And first of all, I'd like to say kudos to Megan Edmister. Many of you were here in chapel on Wednesday. What a glorious start to the semester. Her beautiful prodigal testimony is still ringing in my heart. And my little one fish, two fish title is simply a little homage to Adele Aiken, because she started the academic convo off, if you can remember, back to the fall with a little children's literature. I plan no Seussical readings here today, but I do want to talk about fishing. And how many of you have ever been fishing before? Don't be embarrassed. How many? All right, look around. That is nearly everyone, right? So a good fishing story ought to make sense to some folks. I know maybe this isn't the coolest sport in the... It is a sport, by the way. I've seen it on ESPN. Or maybe it was ESPN 2 or 3. I can't remember. But I think it counts as a sport. And I at least want you to play along with me and pretend that this is a kind of a cool activity, at least for 15 minutes here. All right, play along with me. And so a few words about fishing, and then a few words about scholarship, and how like fishing it really is. Now, I don't want you to be turned off by the notion of scholarship either. Scholarship isn't, at least in my usage here today, isn't just the activity of these robed dignitaries down front here. My picture of scholarship isn't just being hepped up on kind of learning steroids or something like that. My picture of scholarship is something that we all may engage in. It's any time when you're really in the groove of learning, when you're really on the move, when you really get a taste of it, and you love it and enjoy it. And I hope that that's happened for every one of you, and I hope that it's going to happen again, and that we can really enjoy it this semester. I took up fly fishing seven or eight years ago. I've got a prop and everything today. And I knew nothing about it when I got started. For the first 5 years, I took myself to be the worst fisherman in the world. All right, as a fly fishing friend was along with me one time and saw me casting my fly rod, and he called it, there's no hook on the end there, Adele. I thought ahead about that. I thought, no, I'd hook someone's mortar board, and I'd get, you know. Well, anyway, my friend saw me casting, and he called it, He called it the duck and chuck method. Even I knew that was an insult, all right? And then I got my line for, you know, the first year, 2 years, I'd get my line all in a rat's nest and I would take an hour to untangle it. You know, on one occasion, I remember I was fishing and my reel falls off and it falls into a deep hole. And I've still got the pole and the line, and I realize, I can't pull my reel out by the line because the line just plays off the reel. So I had to go in after my reel. That's embarrassing. Look around to see if anyone's watching. Now, on the fishing on the Slippery Rock, now that's an aptly named little stream. I've filled up my waders, not once, but twice, and floated down the stream. And there is more, but some humiliation is best kept secret, right? At least I thought I was the worst fisherman in the world, until a day, this was 2 years ago, up on Elk Creek, up in Erie, and I was catching steelhead. Now, you need to understand steelhead. That's fisherman's measurement there. You need to understand steelhead are these lake trout, and then they come into the tributaries to spawn in the late fall and through the winter, early spring. And they are, when they come in off the lake, they call them chromers because they're silvery and peppy. You know, these are big fish, 5 to 15 pounds, and when you get one on a fly rod, but then to catch them, either silvery if they're fresh out of the lake, or after a few weeks, they start to develop a little bit of a tan, and they reveal their rainbow trout heritage, pink and rainbow colors coming down the gills along the sides. They're just beautiful. Just beautiful. And this was an outing in which I was actually catching fish. All right? I was catching fish. In fact, I think this was my best day ever. And I told the guy downstream from me, he didn't seem to be having much luck. And I said, hey, anything fuzzy and brown. And so he tied on a little brown woolly bugger. And then he proceeded to, I don't know how he did this, but he proceeded to cast over a limb. And that fly dropped down into the water. And the stupidest steelhead in the stream took his fly and started tearing, and the branches bobbing, and he's squealing and running, and somehow this fisherman lands this steelhead. He's waist deep in the water. He's got the steelhead by its tail. He's got, the line is still over the tree branch. He's got his pole under his chin. He's able to pull out his camera to snap a picture of himself. And just then, the fish goes, the pole goes, camera's in the water, his dignity as well. And all he ever recovered was his fishing pole. I gladly bestowed my title on him, the worst fisherman in the world. Now, earlier this fall, I sneaked up on a huge steelhead hiding under a log. And I enticed him to bite. And instead of taking off out into open water and downstream, he shot back under the log. So my line looped under the log, and I was frozen. And then, stroke of genius, I threw my pole in the water, and he pulled it out through, you know, from under the log, and I grabbed the pole and chased this behemoth on down the stream, laughing and squealing. Eventually, he was too big for my line. He finally broke off. But then and there, for that moment, I was the Einstein of angling. All right? So scholarship is a little like fishing. That's a simile. I guess I could have gone with scholarship is a little like completing a jigsaw puzzle. Boring, right? Okay, or scholarship is a little like exploratory surgery. That's kind of gruesome and messy. Or scholarship is like playing hide and seek, but there's so many of us, that would be mayhem. Besides, I've got my fly rod here, so scholarship is like fishing for today. You see something. The big fish. The lunker of an idea. And your heart starts to pound. Awe. Wonder. Curiosity. There is, BTW, very little learning and no scholarship without curiosity. You ready? So first, you see something. Number two, then, you ready your gear. Now, I did, once upon a time, catch a steelhead without any gear. I was able to scare one into a little chute, and he was kind of shallow there, and I scooped him up with my hands. And I know that fishermen frown on this. You know, the challenge is to catch the fish with gear. That's the discipline, to learn how to use the tools to prepare and to practice and develop the skill. And that's true for solid academic work, too. That's what college is for. That's what college is for, and that's why our fields are called disciplines. To master them, insofar as that's possible, requires discipline and practice. And ideally, you develop the skills to pursue good ideas and to catch beautiful solutions. Scholars, young and old, hope to find themselves connected to the topic. And once you are, the action starts. You've got to risk throwing yourself into the topic, jumping in with both feet, getting wet. And then perhaps you'll find yourself racing downstream after that elusive idea, smiling and even hooting as you run. Have you been there? Jesus was a fisherman at heart, and a scholar too. I could talk about, if I had more time, I could talk about the way that Jesus, even as a boy of 12, wowed the eggheads in the temple, and still wows the smarties in our academic temples. Genius. And it seems that Jesus did love the water. I like to picture the workshop there with a window view out over the Sea of Galilee. And it's in that sea where he called his first four disciples right out of the water. Fishermen, all four, Simon, Peter, and Andrew, and then down the beach, James's brother John. Some of his early teaching is lakeside, or right out on the lake. And a few of you had the opportunity just weeks ago to see that beautiful view. And a number of the miracles of Jesus involve fish or involve water. Right? The feeding of the 5,000, you remember that. Two netting miracles. And one of them, the text is careful to point out, they netted 169 large fish. So you can tell there was a fisherman present, right? Laying them out, counting them, you know, keeping track. A goal for the future. You remember the day we caught 169? Jesus, at one point, had Peter cast out a line and then reel in a fish with their tax payment in its gullet. I kid you not. That's in the Bible. And that's why I go fishing every April 15th. Just in case. Right? But I want to stay focused on our setting and on our challenge here, together, here in the academy. As far as we know, Jesus had no interest in launching a university. Not exactly. His wandering band of disciples was, in a way, a tiny mobile U. But here's the image that I want you to ponder. And that's this: Jesus himself as the university. Jesus himself as the uni for the versity, as the one who makes sense of the many, as the point and the source of integration. And I think this is exactly what the Apostle Paul has in mind in the book of Colossians here in chapter 2, but elsewhere as well. Here's Colossians 2, verses 2 and 3. My purpose is that you may be encouraged in heart and united in love. Paul, for his church, for us, I want you to be encouraged in your heart and united in love, so that you may have the full riches of complete understanding, in order that you may know the mystery of God, namely Christ, in whom are hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. Paul's describing here the community of the faithful. He wants us to be encouraged and united in love. He also wants us to grow in understanding and to realize that understanding and wisdom and knowledge are in Jesus. It comes from Him. It's held together by Him. He's the source of integration. He's the uni and the source and significance of all the various aspects of the diverse creation. Paul sees it all flowing from Jesus, understanding, knowledge, and wisdom. If it has to do with learning, Jesus is in the middle of it. In fact, He's somehow the beginning and the end of it too. Scholars, take note. If this is true, it has profound implications for work and exploration in every discipline. It appears that this isn't just Paul's intellectual spin. Jesus Himself expressed that the fundamental mission of every human being is love, including mind love. In Matthew 22, we find in response to a question, the question is more or less, what's it all about? And here's Jesus' reply. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang together on these two commandments. Can we imagine Christian scholarship as mind love? As a love of God and love of neighbor, as honoring and serving? Honoring like Bach, who signed his works SDG, Sola Deo Gloria. Honoring. And serving like every professor and every student here who takes what they're learning and applies it with love for the sake of some neighbor, for the shattered of Haiti, for those shattered by AIDS, or those shattered by bad financial planning or illiteracy. Higher ed guru Ernie Boyer, in a thin little book called Scholarship Reconsidered, envisions scholarship not just as discovery, not just as the groundbreaking work done by the robed few, but he pictured scholarship in a much broader sense. Said, no, here's what scholarship, it includes that discovery, that adventure, but it also includes integration, explanation, and application. The connecting of ideas, the sharing of ideas, and putting ideas to work. And this is what this place is about. That together we're doing just that. Learning to Christ's honor. discovering and sharing, integrating, applying. So we've got another semester together, faculty, staff, students, this whole community and others not present here, to consider this: how can Geneva College be a more beautiful place, a more interesting place, a place that fosters wonder and imagination, a place in which curiosity sparks mind love, and that sparks academic faithfulness, and that generates SDG scholarship. That's the little corner of God's kingdom that this place, at its best, is about. It happens when, together, we engage in mind love for kingdom's sake. In each discipline, on every paper and every project. It won't be easy. In fact, it'll be impossible. We aren't going to get it right. But that's not our assignment. Our assignment is to work together, inch by inch, course by course, assignment by assignment, so that our learning exalts the one and only. I hope this doesn't sound like bad preaching or sloppy rhetoric. I imagine it does. I hope this sounds like a real invitation. And not from me, but from someone who loves you, who knows you, and who wants to draw something out of you. Learning for Christ's sake. Learning for Christ's sake. Now, up on these trips up in Erie, sometimes they get a little crowded on the weekends. I hate that. But here's a little last memory I'll leave with you. When it is crowded, if you get one of these steelhead on, you're fishing with light tippet, they break off. So you've got to run them, you've got to play them, and sometimes you're running up and down the stream. And so if there are other fishermen, you shout out, "Fish on!" And that way people know to kind of stand ready, get out of the way, to clear a path if you've got one on. And I think, maybe, that's the chorus that Jesus would like to hear from a place like this, along all the tributaries of this institution. People shouting out, "Fish on."